VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pop culture, subcultures, music, horror,
sex,
politics, art, and overall bad ass.
This is Society 13, redefining podcasting.
Music.
Horror.
Subculture.
And overall badass. Welcome to Kettle Whistle Radio. With your hosts, Dave and Sean.
Hello, hey. How's it going out there in Radioland? Took a bit of a break there with the Christmas spirit upon us and everything else that was going on. Lots of madness, craziness that happens, like spending too much money and visiting. And okay, anyway. So we have Johnny Daggers and Robert Forloins on tonight talking horror movies. Yes, horror movies. Upcoming, interesting horror movies. We talked about Noctambulous before, but there's something new up their sleeves. These guys are great. A lot of fun. And we're going to hear some music from Dragline. And what you're hearing right now behind me is Dandy Brown. Good friend of mine, actually. We've been playing his stuff for a while. And it's finally getting out there. I mean, he's a busy dude. I shouldn't say finally. But yeah, more people are hearing them in the concert venue type of audience, we'll say. He's just a great dude, great band. We'll hear more from Dandy Brown in the future. But yes, Dragline on the show tonight, music-wise. Yard Panther, as always. And you've got to check out my buddy Erica Eskew, Bukoop Eskew. Check out the show. She's on here a lot more than you think she is. And you've got to check out Fashion Trashin' on YouTube. He's a 5 to 7 minute shows. Fantastically fun. She's really big on the holiday specials. Yes, they are sock puppets, folks. And you too can be a sock puppet. Always offering parts, we'll just say. A friend of mine put up this list. Yeah, here we go. Courtney, you know who you are. Christmas list of, I like how she titles this. Here you go, you douchey snowflakes. Since you decided to pull Baby It's Cold Outside from its playlist because someone was offended, I feel that these other holiday songs are also on the chopping block. How did our generation ever survive? Again, this is my friend Courtney. I won't put her last name out there yet, unless she wants to come on the show. She knows who she is. Okay, number one on the list. I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Subjecting minors to softcore porn condones cheating. The Christmas Song. Open fire, pollution, folks dressed up like Eskimos, cultural appropriation. Holly Jolly Christmas. Kiss her once for me. Unwanted advances. White Christmas, racist. Santa Claus is coming to town. Sees you when you're sleeping, knows when you're awake. Peeping Tom Stalker, perhaps. Number 6. Most wonderful time of the year. Everyone telling you be good, be of good cheer. Forced to hide depression. Okay. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Number 7. Bullying. Number 8. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Forced gender-specific gifts. Dolls for Janice and Jen. And boots and pistols. Guns for Barney and Ben. Santa Baby. This is number 9. Gold digger. Blackmail. Frosty the Snowman. Sexist. Not a snow woman. Number 11. Do you hear what I hear? Blatant disregard for the hearing impaired. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the old tide gay. Wow, I'm just not touching that. Jingle Bell Rock. Giddy up, Jingle Horse. Pick up your feet. Animal abuse. Number 14. Mistletoe and Holly. Overeating. Folks stealing a kiss or two. How did this song ever see the light of day? 15. Winter Wonderland. Parson Brown demanding they get married. Forced partnership. I'll be home for Christmas. Not if you're homeless. That's just insensitive. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. Homicide. Come on, people, wise up. Let's stop picking apart everything and stop with the constant complaining, says Courtney. I love the list. I'm going to add one of my own. I was watching the Pinocchio Christmas special, you know, the Rankin and Bass one. And there was an evil jackalope and a crazy cat that were looking to basically abduct Pinocchio and sell him to the highest bidder. Well, human trafficking. And there it is, the Christmas list. All right, on with the show.
My name's Meg Leachin, and I'm listening to Kettle Whistle Radio.
All right. Yep. All right, folks, friends, and fiends, here we are with Kettle Whistle Radio. Welcome back. It's been a strange year, and it's about to get stranger. We have two guests tonight. One, of course, repeat performer. If you remember from the Noctambulous days, we talked about that movie. And I'm sitting here holding the actual DVD, Blu-ray as well. Great movie. Johnny Daggers is with us. Are you there?
Yes, greetings.
That's a good thing. Okay. Greetings. Yeah, great to hear your voice.
I'm not alone today.
You're not alone. You got Jeff?
Yes, I have my good friend Jeff Fourloins, who was executive producer of Noctambulist, as well as our upcoming film, The Charnel House Vault.
How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Awesome.
Yes, I'm totally looking forward to this new feature of yours. But Noctambulist, now that I have it in my hands and I can put it on a shelf, makes me excited. How do people get a hold of this? Do you want to talk about that?
I'm always excited when it's in my hands.
I mean, it's yeah. Exactly.
You know. No, it's been a long time coming. I'm not to. That sounded weird too after the segueing from having it in my hand. But anyway, it has been a long time coming. It's been about 2 years since the film has wrapped production, and to see it finally hit the stores. Well, January 22nd officially, it'll hit the store. So it's been a long time coming, and we're very excited about it.
Yes, compared to Hitchcock. And as it even says here, a brilliant homage to the silent scream era. And I never even thought of that while I was watching it, that it's a silent film. It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful to watch. I just love the film. Every time I show it to somebody, I get the same reaction. And we both know that we got tears from certain folks, too, that watched it.
Yes, that's the biggest compliment ever for somebody to actually cry watching your film, to think that you've touched them.
Now you're touching them now.
Yeah, I know, right? Everything turns into a sexual innuendo on this show.
I know. We're so far removed from that. If you want that, guys, tune into the Queens of NC-17 on the Society 13 label.
Yeah, I was going to say, pardon my pregnant pause there, but then I realized that also would tie into the touching.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Oh, man. So anyway, so what's the next step with Noctambulist right now?
After it hits the shelves, I am going to run out. I'm going to buy myself a Rolls Royce. I'm going to get Jeff the same, and probably one more. Yeah, so we're planning on sitting back and raking in the dough.
Now we're talking.
No, unfortunately, that probably won't be the case.
And then he woke up.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, we're already working on the next project. As much as I love Noctambulist, and that's literally, I think, you know, probably if my career would last 30 years, Noctambulist would still be one of the highlights, but you know, you got to keep pushing on. So we're already working on the next couple films.
Yeah. Always looking ahead. I know that somehow, even when you're in the process of completion, you're already what, 5 steps ahead on 5 different other projects. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
And yeah. Noctambulist started before Blood on the Rill was even finished and released.
Unreal. So. Wow. Okay. That puts it into perspective. But yeah, just to give folks a refresher course here, Noctambulous. This is in the back of the DVD. Yes, kids, you can buy a DVD and Blu-ray. All right. After her mother's death, Zella descends into a world of madness. Is she merely dealing with her mother's passing in extreme measures, or perhaps her husband, Stellan? I should mention their names. Nicholas Nazaria?
Nazaria
and Lauren Peel is Stella. Stellan is helping to force the hand of fate by pushing her to an early grave. Hopefully, Zella will find the answers she is seeking in a series of bizarre nightmares. And yes, the movie is fantastic, folks. Get it if you can. Go, just buy it. Support the art for once, all right? Once in your life. One more time in your life. And then you'll get more good stuff from Daggers and Company.
That is correct.
Don't we support the artists here? I mean, we try. We do try.
You do. You've always been very supportive. I mean, this is probably like, I don't even know how many times I've been on your show now.
I know, you're co-host.
Essentially, yeah.
And I should mention, Sean is not here today. I'm worried about our actually mutual friend. Sean went to a concert last night, was giving me a full report on the bands he's seeing. Bands like, you're gonna hear Dragline, Shattered, who you heard on the last episode. He was having a great time meeting people, and then just like nothing. He disappeared into a void. I've heard nothing since midnight last night, so we hope he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he probably tied one on, sleeping it off somewhere.
Hopefully. He had quite the trip. But yeah, so you guys go back a little bit, too.
We actually went to the same high school.
Okay. It's weird how that happened, folks, because I met him out of the blue. But anyway, all right, so what can people expect on the special features of the Blu-ray or this DVD that I'm holding currently? Because the Blu-ray is in the other room right now.
There's several deleted scenes. I believe there's a cast and crew interview. There's a director's interview. Funny enough, Jeff will probably laugh at me over this, but I haven't watched it. I've had the DVD for over a week. I've seen it because I edited the film. I've watched this thing probably 300 times.
Right.
You know, it's like when you're an artist and you're making something, you're so sick and tired of it by the time that it gets released that, you know, as much as I love the film, I could probably go a decade without watching it. But I believe that the SGL distributed the film, and I believe that they included all the extras that I sent over. So that was probably four or five deleted scenes, cast and crew interview, director interview.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to that. Yeah, I haven't watched this yet because I always, you know, I saw the cut that you gave me. But yes, I honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I may throw that in tonight, actually, on Blu-ray. That's exciting.
It is exciting, yes.
And
I would like to actually see even more obscure, like such as VHS releases. That would be incredible.
Oh man, that's incredibly retro. I mean, with bands, like I'm sitting here holding a cassette from a band in my hands here, Glowworms. They came out within the past 3 years, and they made a cassette just
Glowworm,
to be authentic.
Like the toy?
What's that? Yeah, but yeah, it's two W's though. I don't know
if
that's how the toy was. Yeah, it's one word, two W's, Glowworms. Yeah, but that it's interesting that they did the cassette thing. A lot of bands are doing the retro thing. The vinyl thing is hot again. Every time I talk to a band on here, it's always the hot subject. But how do people get a hold of your film now?
It'll be available at all major movie retailers, Best Buy, Target. What else, Jeff?
Walmart,
Amazon. You name it. I mean, pretty much every major movie retailer that you can think of.
Betavision.
Oh. I wish. Laserdisc.
Can you imagine?
We'll bring all that back.
Oh, my God. There's still people that sell those things at conventions, believe it or
not. You know, I tried telling Jeff, people still go batshit over this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeff, I love him dearly. He's right when he says that digital copies are the way of the future, but there's such an underground cult following for VHS, you know, Laserdiscs.
Yes, you are correct. Now, let's get into, we're gonna play a little music here, folks, from Dragline, and we're gonna get into this next upcoming project that's pretty damn exciting, I must say. And we'll get back with Jeff and Johnny in just a few. Thanks for listening. That's what you do. Come on, honey, you know it's true.
I'm not afraid of the dark, but you should be. There are things that dwell here in the dark. Things best left unseen.
With the initial smoke clear from the fall of tomorrow, the blood now flows even thicker with dwelling in the dark. 11 stories. 11 stories. All bits of the same mysterious puzzle, fitting together with horrific parallels to its predecessor. Get ready for new, truly terrifying tales set in the broken world from the fall of tomorrow. Take a closer look at what's now dwelling in the dark. If you dare. Available on Amazon in traditional print and ebook. Get your copy today. Visit www.fairlydarkproductions.com for more info on the author and his work.
Still here? Okay. Let's play a game.
All right, folks, we're back and with Johnny Daggers, and we're here with Jeff.
It's Forlorn.
Forlorn. Okay. Sorry about that.
Let's all good.
But yeah, we were talking about Noctambulous earlier, and now we're getting on to new topics and very exciting stuff here. I didn't know how much I was to reveal on earlier shows, so I held back a little bit. Johnny, what's this next thing you got going on?
We actually have a couple things. The next film that I'm writing and directing is called The Charnel House Vault.
Right. Yes, and I did get a copy of that script, and I'm having fun with that.
Good.
Yeah, it's a fun read. And I can see, I don't know, man, is it going to be grainy, like, or is it going to be black and white? What's the approach on this one?
Yeah, you know me, it's still going to be a black and white film.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is going to be dialogue with this film, unlike Noctambulist, which was a silence. So the period for the film is set in Victorian times, and it's a vampire film. Which you might chuckle at, because I've probably told you numerous times that I would never make a vampire film,
right?
Along with never making another zombie film and so forth. Yeah. But Jeff and his wife Emma invited Jerrica and my better half, fiance, out to maybe a month or two ago, invited us out to look at some property that they acquired. And I'll let Jeff tell the story on this one on how
it happened. All right, cool.
Actually, we own 5.5 acres out in Great Cape in West Virginia. It's on the side of a mountain. So we're talking 4-wheel drive to get there. So after we bought the property, I was looking it over and I came across a root cellar. And I didn't even know what a root cellar was. I thought for sure that I'd open that door and there'd be a bunch of bodies stuffed in there or something.
Oh, man.
We were hoping anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, no such luck. Instead, we're cans of, I guess they can their own fruits and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I invited Johnny and Jerrica out, my wife and I, Emma and I did, and so we let Johnny tour the place, which we videotaped, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's up online, just scouting the location, and at that point, I'm not very accustomed to having somebody just give me property and say, here, film what you actually... Not to let me digress for a moment. Jeff, since he was the executive producer on Noctambulist, he had a great time.
Right.
So basically, he said to me, "We need to make another movie again, and I have property for you." And that just never happens.
That
somebody already has, you know, the property, and they want you to just come out and make a film. So after viewing it, you know, I had no script in mind, no idea what the story would be about. It just lent itself to be a vampire film, and the. You know, that's the route that I went with it.
Okay. Well,
but I want to go back to more of like a throwback to the Hammer horror films that we all grew up and loved. None of the sparkly Twilight vampires and that bullshit. So it's going to be back to the old Christopher Lee days of Hammer horror films. And
very cool. Is it going to be scary?
Yeah, that's the intent.
Okay.
Yes. But unlike Noctambulist, which was a psychological thriller, obviously, because this is a vampire film, it'll be, you know, it'll be a psychological thriller, but I mean, also, you know, great vampire executions and, you know, things of that nature. So a little bit more graphic.
Interesting. Okay. Didn't see that coming. That's cool. All right. Yeah. Yeah. You did it. You always said how you were done with horror for a while. Well, you were done for a while. I mean, Noctambulist is a different kind of horror. And I enjoyed that. And it just, it's a really refreshing approach. But yeah, so this one, how many folks are going to be in this film? How you like, you get like five people in this microcosmic world? Or
as far as the lead characters, yeah, there's roughly, essentially, there's really only three or four main characters, and then, you know, some supporting actors, and then, I mean, as far as the extras, there's going to be a good bit of extras that would make up, you know, the vampires.
Okay, that's cool. All right, so that makes it even more interesting. I mean, some of my favorite movies, think about The Shining, of course, you know, there's like three people in the whole movie. You have to really concentrate on those characters and build them and make people like them or hate them. Are these going to be likable folks, hateable folks, lovable? What
a little bit of both. I mean, from Noctambulist, you know, I essentially did the same thing where there was only four main characters in Noctambulist. Yeah. And yeah. I think that it would be safe to say that we all went back and forth on Stellan, played by Nicholas Nazario. We went from, you know, I don't necessarily know if liking him would be the correct word, but you know, there's parts where you certainly hate him more than others. And then, you know, there are times that, you know, you wonder, is he really gaslighting her, or is there something going on that we don't quite know about? So he's one of those characters you're kind of back and forth on. Obviously, you feel nothing but heartfelt sympathy for Zella the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, to the point of tears for folks that watched it. Yeah. Now, curious too, are you having creature effects? Are you going for the suave looking, you know, Hammer vampire? Or
Not necessarily suave. I've never really, even though I love Hammer and, you know, I'm a fan of Bela Lugosi, you know, me, I always still have to draw more on the early German expressionist influences, which really influenced me with Noctambulist. You know, so I'm thinking something more along the lines of like Orlok or, you know, just some of the more creepier zombies. Definitely not the suave, romantic type zombies.
That's zombies, vampires.
Or, I mean, vampires. I'm saying zombies.
Do you have a zombie thing on the back burner?
No, not at all.
Never. I'm kidding. No.
But totally I did mention kidding. That I'd never do a zombie or a vampire film again.
Yeah. Don't worry, I'll sell them on you. Yeah.
Not happening.
All right, so who came up with the script?
I did.
Okay, and Jeff, you read it and said, let's do it? Or were there some...
I knew whatever he came up with, it was going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just wanted to make a film and didn't really... He just put all of his trust in me, which is phenomenal.
Well, let's talk about Jeff then. Your experience here. We'd like to get that on these airwaves since you're new to these airwaves.
I am. Yeah, so Noctambulist was my first as the executive producer. And so Johnny kind of made me be in it. So I am in it.
Cool.
A few times, actually.
Very cool. That I was not aware of.
He was he helped out a lot inside extra roles where you wouldn't really. A few scenes he's discernible in. Other scenes he's one of the robed figures in the first dream sequence of the movie.
Okay.
He's also one of the orderlies in the institution.
Right, wasn't supposed to be, but
yeah, he hates acting. By the way,
yeah.
But of course, I gave him another acting role in the Charnel House Ball.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. A small one.
Mm-hmm. Small, yeah, it keeps growing, just so you know.
That's what she said.
Oh, back to that again.
I know. But speaking of roles, I do have a particular role for a character in the film by the name of Frederick, who I guess we're going to unveil to the world today or whenever this airs. When I wrote the character, I actually see you playing him very appropriately.
Man, yeah, I was on the in on this, nervous, excited at the same time. And honored. And then reading the character, it seems like, yeah, something I can actually do. But yeah, hey, I really appreciate your confidence in me. I was going to ask about your confidence in people you're picking for these roles. Like, where do you, what kind of characters are you looking for?
I mean, we have an array of characters, anything from doctors to, you know, I mean, I think your character, without revealing too much about him, he's rather unhinged.
Okay.
On many levels, as I think you probably picked up on.
You see, folks, this is how I fell right into place.
Yeah, how come when I think of unhinged, I automatically think of David Fairhead?
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Probably because you read more of my stuff than anybody else.
Right?
Yeah, that could be. That could be. But hell, this sounds like a great time, man. But what are these other characters, too? Let's talk about leading characters and, well, the vampire.
Well, there are several vampires. Okay. I don't really want to give too much away about the vampires.
That's what I thought. Okay.
But I could say the lead actor is being played by Jeff's brother, Robert.
Okay.
And his name is Alexander Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, Samuel Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm. That's the character's name, that is.
That's the character's name, yeah. Robert Forlanes is playing Samuel Hawthorne.
Okay.
And he is the grandson of the great Alexander Charnel. But yeah, Robert has a lot of acting experience. He's been involved with Haunts for many of years, was lead tour guide on Haunts, has a great personality for acting.
All right, so are there going to be other places, other locations other than the house? Is everything taking place on this mountainside?
Not necessarily. I'll let Jeff explain that a little bit.
So we will probably also film in Greensboro, Maryland, which is on the eastern shore about an hour and a half from here.
Okay.
And I don't want to get into any specifics of why, only because it may give away something, and I personally don't know what I'm supposed to say in regards to that.
Yeah, I know. I try to tread lightly with these things.
Yes.
That's cool, but though.
It's an awesome location.
Well, for the first time in my career, we have a studio, like a physical studio in West Virginia that's on the property of the house and the Charnel House vault, where we're actually going to be building sets within the studio. And then Jeff and his wife are in the process of erecting another studio in Maryland as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Erecting a studio for this, or?
For this and future films. Yeah, okay. Jeff's also working on a film after this.
Yeah, I own Furnace Creek Films, and immediately after Johnny's film's over in the fall of 2019, we'll be starting The Lenticum Witch, Victoria's Curse, which is full color.
Okay. And it's a story. Well, you delve into the story a bit.
Well, the story is about two sisters in 1853 who are accused of witchcraft and incidentally hanged for it. Not before the one sister utters a curse that basically comes into today, and one of the descendants of people that hanged her comes into town and chaos reigns.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's going to be called, what did you say?
That's called The Lenticum Witch, Victoria's Curse.
Nice. Okay. So
going to be involved with that film as well. Essentially, I guess this is breaking news because it's never been mentioned on the radio before, but Dagger Vision Films and Furnace Creek Films have merged together as a collective film company. So, you know, there'll be films that Jeff writes and directs that I'll be assistant director on and of help in any other ways that I possibly can be. And also, subsequently, he is also going to be assistant director on the Charnel House Vault, and, as well as executive producer and actor. So the two companies are more or less, you know, sister entities of one another.
Well, that's cool. Sounds great.
Definitely not brother entities, sister entities, because he always goes with that word.
It's just what comes to mind, you know. But yeah, so it's very exciting times. And, you know, getting back to the Charnel House Vault, there's some talented actors and actresses that are cast that we know they're wonderful, and they have a fantastic resume. However, we have not met them in person yet, but they've already agreed to come on board. For instance, playing the wife of Samuel Hawthorne is a talented actress by the name of Michelle Mullins, and she's located in West Virginia. We also have Dorothy Malinowski. We have Donna Bryce Madison, Russell Vogler. Pardon me if I mispronounce any of these names. We have Susanna McCaleb Woodhead as well. So some of these people are brought on by, you know, Jeff. I'll let Jeff go over some of the other names from the people, you know, that he knows personally. Okay. That brought on. But a very, very talented crew. So we're taking some people from Baltimore and shipping them off to West Virginia and then recruiting local talent in West Virginia as well. And then obviously Pittsburgh talent such as yourself, as long as, you know, you want to be a part of the crew. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, shooting you said starts in June, correct?
Yes, that is correct. First week of June.
First weekend in June.
Okay. Well, no, I look forward to everything. I just look forward to seeing the location. It sounds like. Well, a vivid experience. You said it's a side of a mountain, and this is an old house that was just sitting there?
No, the house will look old by the time we're done with it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. It's not really old. It's actually where my wife and I go to get away from everything.
I got you. Okay.
So it's just, it is. It's gorgeous. It's in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The root cellar is like right off the house. You can't, it's not like against the house. It's in the woods, so it's creepy looking.
No.
Here, I'm holding up a picture of it. See it?
Yeah, as if they can see the photo. Do you see that, everyone, on Radio Plan?
Well, I do try to envision everything like while I'm reading the script, because it just, yeah, I already see, I could see where you guys are going to go with this, and it just, it's totally cool. Just my kind of film. Definitely, I'm a big fan of going back to, and Johnny knows this, Let's Scare Jessica to Death. Just for the cinematography and the creepy aspect, not even the dialogue, which is kind of creepy too. Have you? You guys are both familiar with that, right?
Amber Heard, right?
Let's Scare Jessica to Death. No.
Yeah, that has Amber Heard in it.
Yeah.
So. I am not familiar with it.
Oh man, that's a good revisit. I own a copy. I should send it to you. It's so different, but it's all about the just the aesthetics, everything around their surroundings. That the monster is their surroundings, and it sounds like you've got both things happening here.
Well, we do, and you know, over the years, you know, in my earlier years, I didn't really have a sense of direction or where I wanted to go as a filmmaker. It was very guerrilla style, haphazard, typical indie filming when you first start out, and before you really find your place and before you really learn your craft and your tools. And I think that what I hope, at least with Noctambulist, is that you know, the sense to every, the smallest nuance of every scene was meticulous. And, you know, the cinematography, which was the first time that I've ever done all of the cinematography on a film, you know, just the fine details were so important to me. And, you know, that's my direction as a neo-noir filmmaker, and this is going to have that same neo-noir element where every, and Jeff is executive producer, he and his wife have been, you know, really stepping up the game, picking out, you know, antique shopping left and right and getting era-appropriate props and you know, product to make this film look as beautiful mm-hmm. as it can be and as appropriate as can be.
That's a challenge that's like not respected enough. Like you did it with Noctambulist, just the surroundings. And there you kind of fell into some scenery that worked for you, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. Just period. Like with the Charnel House Fawn. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything creepier than the root cellar that Jeff and Emma, you know, stumbled upon when they purchased their house. That was just pure fate. You know, it was like the gods smiling down upon me with that. But, and then from there, let's take this splendid object and exemplify it and make it even creepier and then add, you know, other sets around it to complement that.
Which, yeah, I look forward to seeing in person, actually. I can't wait to see this place. Yeah, we live in an age now, and this drives me crazy. If you watch films with a younger crowd, they like to pinpoint everything that's wrong with a scene. Right. To the point where it's just like, come on, what are you doing? But they are looking for that. And so if they see, you know, somebody's mug in a scene, you know, that, oh, they didn't have mugs then. Or, you know, like, how meticulous, I mean, what do? You shoot it, then go back and remove things? I mean,
you really try to have everything ironed out before you even begin production. Then, of course, again, there are going to be times where, you know, an actor walks in when you're taking a break and, you know, they have their coffee mug and they set it on the table. And so you have people like, for instance, on Noctambulist, Jeff was very great with continuity and making sure that if somebody left their, you know, let's say we're on break and somebody put their keys down for a second, me looking through the lens of the camera, I might not be able to detect that. But Jeff standing next to me would be like, hey, look, we got to move this. And, you know, a lot of times there were pickup shots. So we would film a scene, let's say with, you know, the doctor in Noctambulist, he would be, you know, at Zelen and Stella's house, and then we'd have to do a pickup shot a week or maybe even 2 weeks later. We would take photographs of how everything was placed, where the lamp was at, what was on the table when we, left filming the last time, so that when we go back and do a pickup shot, everything's in the same place. All of the same items are still there, because continuity can make or break a film.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly where I was going with that, because I get annoyed by it, because I know what it takes to make a film to maybe 20% of it, or you guys got all 130% of it. But I can't stand when people are looking to see what's wrong, and that must drive you crazy as an indie artist, because you're worried about that.
But I mean, that happens in Hollywood films too.
Oh, definitely.
You
know? Yeah.
I mean, there's Hollywood films where you could go through, and if you just do a Google search for continuity and discrepancies with Hollywood films, it'll bring up a giant list, you know, Jaws being one of the most famous ones. But I mean, then there's other films that I'm very partial to, like a film that was one of Vince Vaughn's first films. It was called Clay Pigeons, where he played a serial killer. Mm. And Joaquin Phoenix is actually in that, too. It was one of his early roles. It wasn't one of Vince's earliest films, but it's kind of close. But anyway, there's a scene where Joaquin is having sex with this actress. And while they're having sex, there's a photo on the headboard that gets knocked over. And then in the next scene, it takes place back in the bedroom. You can see the photo standing upright again.
That sucks. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the continuity is always going to happen. You can nitpick it to death. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I really don't care. It doesn't really bother me. You try not to let these little things happen, but they can and they will, whether it's independent or overly produced Hollywood film.
What are you doing with soundtrack?
Yeah, you know, my intent is always to score. I mean, that's my dream, is to score an entire soundtrack myself. Mm-hmm. With Noctambulist, I was able to contribute two or three songs to the soundtrack. But when you're writing, directing, doing the cinematography, doing the editing, and everything else that's involved, it's very time consuming, and you don't necessarily have the time to score the entire soundtrack. So, you know, I imagine I'll probably write parts for it. Jeff has talked about maybe having me write some scores for his film. As far as scoring the whole soundtrack, I don't really know. You know me, the type of music I'm very particular about, what gets scored in mm-hmm. my films.
Yeah.
With Noctambulist, it was all orchestral, and that's the way that I write as a musician. So it'll be a lot of the same atmospheric, you know, not metal or industrial or any of these other type of... you know, popular music genres that are being played in. What's dubstep, I guess, is used.
Oh,
I guess that's the word. And I can't stand dubstep, but I guess that's used in a lot of the modern horror films. So you can see none of that with Jeff or I.
That's a pet peeve of mine in films that I've liked or hated. When the music just takes you out of the scene, it's not helping the scene. And that's what a lot of it's doing. Like, you'll just, and somebody's walking down a hall and there's the awful, like, keyboard music just blaring and nothing is happening and nothing's going to happen, and you can tell, and that's bad. When the music is not in sync. Now, I noticed with yours, yours is just it accompanies it, as it should, not annoy the audience.
It should be an accompaniment. Exactly. I mean, honestly, I consider the music, you know, another actor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's the way it should be. It should complement the scene and go along, coincide with it.
Set the mood. I mean, yeah, there's nothing like, you know, you watch an old flick, you know, it starts with the music and maybe a little fog on the moors, and, you know, it sets the tone. Even if the movie wasn't good, even that you remember that part.
It just kills me with modern day horror films when an intense scene's about to come on and then all of a sudden death metal starts blaring. Ugh. And I'm like, what the fuck, where did this come from? I hate metal to begin with, no offense, and I know you're a fan, but it's just like, it's just like way to just kill the scene for me. Yeah. I don't know.
There's a time and a place. I mean, there really is. It's done right, or it just shouldn't be done at all. I just, there's quite a few like that, and I could sit and name some new ones. I don't want to do that. But, sometimes it's all about the soundtrack, and they have a horrible movie, and it's like,
you know, yeah,
that's a weird one, too. I don't know.
It just happens. I mean, I'm guilty of that myself.
You are? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day when I first started and we were filming Caustic Zombies, you know, it was... I had no sense of direction on where I was going. I was friends with a lot of people that were in horror punk bands, which are great bands, but it was just like the entire soundtrack was like horror punk. And, you know, it really, there was no real thought given behind it. And I look back on those early days, and now that you've grown and matured in your profession, it's like, wow, seriously. But like, that was a long time ago, and things have progressed since then. So, I, you know, back in the day when I was young and an amateur, I was guilty of that myself.
Oh, okay. Well, so, as long as you can grow from that experience. I mean, yeah. that really. So, all right. So the next step for this new film, what's your next move?
After the Toronto House, or are you?
No. In preparation. Are you just going to set up?
Well, we pretty much have the majority of the main cast nailed down. There's still some small roles as extras. Even though you're one of my dearest friends, we're still having you audition for Frederick.
I appreciate that.
And Jeff's going to be watching you very closely.
Okay.
That's me.
Oh, boy.
But no, you don't have anything to worry about. At least I don't think you do. I wouldn't have offered the role to you if I didn't think that you could handle it. But we have our first. Well, we've been having pre-production meetings for how many weeks now?
4 or 5.
Yeah. So, and then we're going to meet with the crew in West Virginia mid-January.
Okay.
And then Jeff, Emma, and his wife, Emma, who's also executive producer, is a fabulous engineer. She's very handy and is playing a monumental part in helping with a lot of the set building. And basically, I have artistic skill set, but I have no mechanical skill set. So
I'm not handy either. It's her.
Yeah. So Jeff and I let Emma know what we're looking for, and she can build it and put it together. Anything from electrical engineering to the actual physical sets themselves, she's very handy with. So it's going to be many months of building and planning.
Okay, well, I look forward to seeing all of this. When is this audition?
I believe that you and I discussed January before the end of the as soon as this show ends, we're putting you on for auditions.
Oh, good. Oh,
you can get
good.
The memo.
Yeah, that could be a problem. But yeah, all right. I look forward to it. I'm excited. This whole project just sounds. I just can't believe Johnny Daggers is making a vampire film. I love it. I love it.
I'm surprised as much as you are, I think. But it actually feels very at home for me. So.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can't wait to see this set. This sounds exciting. What's the shooting process? Are you going to take weekends? It's like at a time, a couple of
every
weekends.
Every weekend, we're looking at about an 8-week time frame. So just on week. I mean, the thing about it is, even though with Jeff and Emma as the executive producers, they're providing us with great property, great props, and everything to make this look like the production value is very high. When you're indie level and you still can't afford to pay all your actors and or actresses, they're working day jobs. So it just makes sense to film on weekends when people can schedule time off to be a part of the film and not take anybody away from their paying day jobs.
Well, that's appreciated, I'm sure. Me included.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's going to be weekends. We're looking at about an 8-week. Production time frame.
All right. Well, any other mentions or websites or Twitters you want to throw out there?
Oh boy, Jeff and I did this the other night. We made a video for everyone just as a Merry Christmas holiday greeting. And Jeff knew my URL for the Charnel House Vault, which is just Facebook, the Charnel House Vault. But he left it up to me to say his URL, and I had no idea what
it was. Great.
Yeah, it worked out well. What is your URL, Jeff?
At the Linthicum Witch on Facebook.
Yeah. And also, you can visit officialjohnnydaggers.com, and Jeff's website is
furnished-creep.com.
Not furnish as in the furniture, but furnace as in, you know, heating your home. and then I think on Twitter, I seldom use it, but I'm Johnny Daggers too, because I locked myself out of my old account.
Oh,
geez.
I'm glad you said that. Okay. Yeah. Then I got to refriend you then, don't I?
We're friends on there. I'm hardly ever on it. So.
I know. Same here. Like I said, necessary evil. And I am at Fairly Dark on Twitter, folks. Should know that. And the website, lots of changes coming on. You could find all my shows, Kettle Whistle Radio, at www.fairlydarkproductions.com. But go to society-13.com for all the other podcasts. And the Queens of NC-17 are blowing it out of the water. The Pop-Off with Martise is a great show, too. And we got a few others coming along the way. And I'm sure we're going to hear from these guys, Jeff and Johnny, in the near future with updates.
Yeah, always a pleasure being on your show. I look forward to coming back and discussing the details. Also, hopefully the next time that we're on the show, we have you nailed down as a definitive cast member.
I'll do my best. I'll do my best. I don't know what my best is, because I've only ever gotten my head blown off in a couple of indies, you know?
Well, so. Just get your Oscar acceptance speech ready, okay?
Okay. I can do that. I'll practice here. Oh, man. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys doing this, and we will update everybody on this upcoming film. Meanwhile, guys, you can get Noctambulous. It's out there, the DVD, Blu-ray. Go out and buy it, man.
Pre-order on Amazon right now. The official release date's January 22nd, but people can go onto Amazon right now and place their pre-orders.
Okay. Oh, okay. Very good. Pre-orders. By the time they listen to this, it'll be available, I'm sure. But we're going to try to get this up right away
for
you guys.
I hope this airs before a month away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it won't be available in the stores till January 22nd, so, but they can pre-order now. So.
Okay, perfect. Okay, awesome. All right, well, thanks for tuning in. As always, thanks for listening, and always tune in. And you can friend us. I should throw this out here, too. I always forget to go to Dynamite Comics if you want an issue of Demon Eye. It's available there, not on Burning Bowl Publishing, which we've been saying in the past. All right, thanks again, folks, and good night.
Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electric acid. Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Electricast.